It's time for In Process, conversations about business in the 21st century with Evelyn Ashley and John Monahan, presented by Trusted Counsel, a corporate and intellectual property law firm. For more information, visit trusted-counsel.com. And now, with In Process, here are Evelyn Ashley and John Monahan.
Hello, and welcome to In Process, conversations about business in the 21st century, presented by Trusted Counsel, a corporate and intellectual property law firm. I'm John Monahan.
And I'm Evelyn Ashley.
And we're partners in Trusted Counsel. Today we're going to discuss the Affordable Care Act and the other human resource compliance and training issues. We're thrilled to have two guests today that can give great insight into the Affordable Care Act. First, we have Lisa Owen of Core Benefit Solutions, who will speak from a consultant's perspective, and Steve Mintz of NextGen, a Sprint reseller, will speak from an actual business implementation perspective. But first, Evelyn, you know, we really had a challenging time even getting the show together because you and I have been traveling just so much.
All over.
I know. I was in Los Angeles. You were in London. You actually went to the International Referral Conference, right?
Yeah. So, which is a really interesting group of people. It started out as a law firm affiliation group from around the globe, but and we've been members of that group for this past year. It was their annual meeting, and you know, while we thought originally that the real attraction for being a member of that group was the fact that we would actually have relationships with attorneys around the world to the extent that our clients are expanding in that way. What made it really interesting to me is IR Global has now decided they're going to expand to accountancies and investment bankers.
Oh, great.
Which, you know, from the perspective of I have M&A work, you know, extensive accounting issues in different countries, it really, really improves our distribution channel for work and support of our clients. So it was a really exciting group. I met people from basically, you name the country, even Nigeria. Yeah, I talked to a lawyer from Nigeria, and I did not ask him about spam, but but I desperately wanted to. So how about you, John? How was L.A.?
L.A. was good. Went out there for NAMWLF, which is the National Association of Minority and Women-Owned Law Firms. So that's
a mouthful.
Yeah, that's really a lot to say. But it's a great conference. It was almost, it was a week, which was wow, that was
long.
A long time to spend away from work and with other attorneys.
It was. We missed you, John.
Yeah. But it was a great group. The point of the conference is really it creates a lot of networking opportunities with in-house counsels, Fortune 500 companies and other large companies, and then also a lot of minority and women-owned law firms, usually more boutique in nature. So it was a great source for finding other people who had very specific expertises around the country. It was
a
lot of fun.
Great for expertise referrals and just general networking.
Yeah, and there was a lot of CLE to it too, which is continuing legal education, of course, and focused. I went to a couple that were really great. I mean, one of them focused on privacy issues
and
technology.
That's really top-notch. We've had so many issues with that, and you know, actually, I'm sure that's going to be really helpful since you attended that, and we have a we have a privacy and data breach conversation coming up in a couple of weeks.
Right. Yeah. So I think that'll be very helpful. It's really interesting. I mean, it's one of those things that whether you're big or small, you really can't avoid knowing the compliance rules around that these days and sort of the risk factors that you have to deal with.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be really helpful. But anyways, let's get on to the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah. Today's show, of course, as we said before, was about the Affordable Care Act, complying, and some other HR issues. It's just been such a hot topic, obviously in the news for, what, 5 years now going on?
Forever, yes.
But the funny thing is that people really still don't know much about it.
Well, they just know it as they don't like it. It's Obamacare.
Right.
so they don't really, I don't think they really even understand what Affordable Care Act stands for.
Right. And a lot of the times we've had people saying that they don't want to comply with it or they don't like it. And then we say, well, what is it exactly that you're not in compliance with or that you don't like? And they're not really even sure what.
What those things
are. Yeah. What they know is that it's very, well, it's sort of scary the way that it's been put in the public. But it doesn't have to be. I mean, step number one in diffusing that is sort of understanding it, which is what hopefully we'll have the show do today.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think at its basis, you know, everyone needs to really understand that this is an initiative to create more opportunities for more people to actually have access to healthcare. And that is a good thing. I think everyone can agree with that.
Right. Yeah. And we won't be pushing any political agendas today, but...
Speak for yourself, John.
But we will be explaining what this is about. But first, I wanted to play a clip, which is actually from Jimmy Kimmel, which I found to be pretty funny because it's about the difference or lack of difference between the Affordable Care Act and Obamacare, where they actually go out on the street and they ask people about... what their feelings are about both.
An amazing clip.
Yeah, let's play the clip.
These government shutdowns have happened before. The last one was in 1996, but the debate on this one is particularly heated because people have such strong opinions about Obamacare. Interestingly, the polls show that most Americans say they don't like Obamacare, but they love what's in it when it all gets broken down. It's like the opposite of a McNugget. So, it's interesting. And when there are complicated issues to study, most people just side with whoever they usually side with. So I decided to conduct an experiment today. We sent a camera crew out on the Hollywood Boulevard to ask people which they thought was better, the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. Now, as you may know, Obamacare is just the nickname for the Affordable Care Act. They're the same thing. But lo and behold, we found people who did not know that, and that didn't stop them from weighing in on it.
We're talking about healthcare today, and which plan do you support, Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act?
The Affordable Care Act.
And what is it about Obamacare that you do not like?
I just think that there's a lot of holes in it, and it needs to be revamped. I think it's
and you think
it hasn't
the affordable,
been thought out.
You think the Affordable Care Act is a better plan than Obamacare?
Better, but I'm not happy with that either.
So you disagree with Obamacare?
Yes, I do.
Do you think insurance companies should be able to exclude people with pre-existing conditions?
No.
Do you agree that young people should be able to stay on their parents' plans until they are 26?
They should be able to, yes.
Do you agree that companies with 50 or more employees should provide health care?
I do.
And so by that logic, you would be for the Affordable Care Act?
Yes.
Do you think Obamacare is socialist?
Yes, I do.
Do you think the Affordable Care Act is socialist?
No.
Do you know that Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act are the same thing?
No, they're not. Thanks, you made me look stupid.
That's what we do.
Okay, you did good.
Great. Well, I hope...
Well, hopefully this whole topic area is going to clear up a lot of misconceptions about what Affordable Care Act is as versus Obamacare. Hope so, anyway.
Yeah, I think so. So let me not take any longer introducing our guests. We've probably talked enough, so... Let me introduce Lisa Owen and Steve Mintz. Lisa Owen is president and founder of Core Benefit Solutions, an employee benefits brokerage and consulting firm. Core Benefit Solutions was founded in 2007 and is focused on offering tailored employee benefit programs to companies of all sizes. With over 50 years of combined experience, the Core team is comprised of individuals from varied backgrounds, creating a dynamic group of people who are ready to serve you and your employees. With a keen focus on providing consulting, strategic planning, and knowledge-based expertise, Core Benefits addresses its clients' needs with experienced solutions that deliver effective results. We also have with us Steve Mintz. Steve Mintz is CEO of Next Gen Cellular. Next Generation Cellular is a Sprint-preferred retailer started in 1997 by Steve and Beth Mintz. Next Generation Cellular grew fast and continues to grow every day. They now operate 12 Sprint stores in the metro Atlanta area. Next Generation Cellular has both kiosks and traditional stores throughout metro Atlanta. Each location has a full staff prepared to take care of all your wireless needs, including equipment, repair, and troubleshooting. Additionally, Next Generation has a dedicated business group that offers all Sprint products, services, and solutions on site. Next Generation is dedicated to evolving the customer experience in its Sprint stores, as well as creating an environment for its employees that allows them to grow and achieve their financial goals. Lisa and Steve, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
Glad to have you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's good to be here. Great.
I think it also makes sense that we mentioned that Lisa and Core Benefits actually works with Steve and his company, which is how we made the connection here, which we appreciate very much.
Yeah, we thought it would be very helpful to have someone who, people that have worked together and sort of know how one can benefit the other in these situations. Well, Lisa, I'll let you take the first question, which is a softball. It's an easy one. So the Affordable Care Act, which many of us have come to know as Obamacare, what is it?
Well, hopefully everyone just listened to the Jimmy Kimmel show and will now understand that hopefully at some point they are one and the same, that people refer to it as the Affordable Care Act, often referred to as health care reform, also referred to as Obamacare. We often refer to it, to keep it simple, ACA, which is the acronym for Affordable Care Act. So, of course, it was signed in.
Great, Lisa. Now you've introduced yet another acronym.
We had so many to keep up with. One more.
Yeah, we like to keep it confusing, right? The world of insurance. But basically, this was signed into law in March of 2010. The law has continued to evolve. As early as last night, we have signed in. President Obama signed into law that now states can determine what is considered small group. So before, it was going to be small group would be in the 2 to 99 range of number of employees. And now, just last night, they determined that each state will be able to determine the definition of small group. And we believe, pretty confident, that Georgia will elect for small group to be the 2 to 50 space and keep it that way. We do not know that for sure yet.
Okay.
So
I was afraid you just blew all my questions.
So that is something new, and we've continued to, as you know, there's been amendments throughout, but that is the most recent, and we consider that good news. We're hoping, keeping our fingers crossed, that Georgia will pass for small group to be 2 to 50, and we'll explain a little bit more about that and why that's important. It has to do with underwriting of how your company is underwritten is why that makes a difference in the pricing that's associated with that underwriting.
Okay, yeah, we'd love to dig it more into that. Right now, we have to take a quick break, but we're going to get back and we're going to discuss that and a lot more issues about Affordable Care Act.
And now, back to In Process, conversations about business in the 21st century with Evelyn Ashley and John Monahan. For more information, visit trusted-counsel.com.
Welcome back. We were just talking to Lisa Owen about the Affordable Care Act. You know, Lisa, one question that we always have is, who has to comply with ACA?
Yep. Well, there are different pieces of ACA.
I'm getting good. I picked it up really quick.
Quick learner. But the one that most people hear about and are concerned about is the employer mandate, which is who has to offer coverage, what companies have to offer coverage. And it's also considered affordable coverage as well, which we'll tap into. But those companies are companies with 50 or above employees on their payroll. But how they define employees would be considered what's called an applicable large employer. So there's a formula that includes full-time and part-time. Before, in insurance world, people just kind of immediately thought about full-time employees.
Right.
So that was new. So you may have a company, you know, that has 30 full-time employees, but 75 part-time, and they have to actually go through the formula to see if they are, and it's a formula of calculating your number of full-time, which is 30 plus hours, 30 hours or more, and then the part-timers are under 30 hours, and there's a formula to determine what fraction of an employee those part-timers are considered, and we help our clients go through that formula to see if they're over that 50 mark, and if so, they're mandated to offer coverage, or there's a penalty. There are And then they also, the second penalty is dealing with affordability. So there are two penalties. Number one is, do you offer coverage? So there's a penalty associated if you don't. Now, the law goes into above 50 for effective January 1st, 2016.
Okay.
Prior to that, it was 100 plus. So let me clarify that. But going back to the penalty, the second penalty is if it's not considered affordable, which is, affordability is 9.56% of the W-2 income of the employee. They cannot pay more than 9.56% of the W-2 income.
Per year.
Per year, correct. And if so, if that if it's not considered affordable, that individual then turns around and goes into the marketplace purchases an individual plan, and then they're subsidized. So those three things would have to happen. So everything has to line up. Then the employer could get dinged for the affordability part. But a lot of employers have decided that, you know, a lot of that has, you know, you often you don't get employees to participate regardless if you charge them $5 or
right.
So some aren't going to continue, aren't going to go in the marketplace. So those three things would have to happen to get that that penalty on the affordability part. But if you decide not to offer coverage, no matter what, as an employer, if you're mandated, you will get a penalty for not offering.
Wow. Well, let me go back to the number of employees real fast. It's so right now the law has been changed and it's going to be 50 full-time equivalents. So one thing, it sounds like what you were saying really is even if you don't have 50 employees, they sort of take anybody you have part-time and sort of see whether they almost equal a full-time employee when you add up all those part-time people together.
Right.
Correct? Okay. So that's a good rule of thumb for somebody who's maybe they've been hearing 50, but they're not really at 50. They need to be cognizant of if you have a lot of part-time staff, you might have to comply with this.
Correct. And there's another piece too, not to make it too confusing, but if you've got common ownership considered, if it's considered under a controlled group,
mm-hmm.
let's say you have ownership in this one company and then you have ownership in other companies that aren't even affiliated with company A, you have to go through the control group definition to make sure that they don't combine those companies. And those that control group definition has been around for a long time under the 401k you know, retirement plans have been following that definition for a long time. And the Affordable Care Act just adopted that same definition for control group. But some employers don't realize that that does come into play. And it can even be your spouse owns, if you own 100% of one company and your spouse owns 100% of a completely different company, it could be a dental practice and a cellular service, it could be potentially considered a control group.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah, and that's...
And so it's something you need to work with your consultants and your attorneys to make sure you understand if that would come into play. They're formulas that play into the controlled group definition.
So just to clarify, though, you can have less than 50 that are full-time. You do this formula because you have part-time people. Do you also have to offer coverage to those part-time employees?
You do not. That just determines whether you're, at first, number one,
you're
have
subject to
subject to the mandate. Mm. And then if you're subject to the employer mandate of offering coverage, then you also have to file a report at the end of each year, which is the new IRS forms that people are hearing about for the first time in 2016, the 1095 forms, 1094. C form, so that this will be the first time that companies over 50 will have to, even though they weren't mandated, they are having to file these forms this year in 2016 for the 2015 calendar year.
I think a lot of the fear associated with the Affordable Care Act from the employer perspective is that, you know, smaller employers, if you just assume that you don't actually have a control group issue or, you've got your 50 employees, they're not always able to get, quote unquote, affordable care. So is there anything being done about that level of pricing that goes to the company? And
right. There, the one thing that, you know, I would say that, you know, not to, I think I'm jumping the gun on a question, so I hope, you know, you addressed it, Evelyn, that accessibility is one of the biggest advantages of the Affordable Care Act. But the word affordable, I would say I'd have to differ with that. In many respects, we've seen costs increase. So to that point of all of a sudden you're mandated to offer benefits and costs are increasing is making it more difficult. But there are resources and tools. Some of the carriers have lowered the participation requirements of who has to actually enroll. There are products that have been introduced to the what you would call the small group market. Anywhere from 100 employees and below, they now offer what's called level-funded products, which is kind of a self-funded type product, but it's for the small group, and there's not as much risk involved in that to combat some of the increasing healthcare cost. And that's something that I would recommend everybody ask, you know, their broker or consultant, is to talk to you a little bit about level funding and self-funding as well. It's fully insured. It's not for everyone, but it is, you know, a resource.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
But now that they've redefined the small group market, we were really concerned if they were going to put the 50 to 99 in that block, that they've kept the 2 to 50, because that means that they would likely be a part of the healthcare rising costs that we've seen because of how that block is rated. The 2 to 50 block is rated with what's called community rates. Mm-hmm. So, and I would say it's helped some, but in majority of the cases, it's raised their costs, mm-hmm. that rating factor.
So has this been a huge impact on companies that now have to comply? I mean, cost-wise, would you say it's a significant burden? I mean, sometimes any increase in cost can be significant, but...
You know, because companies 50 and above are the ones that are mandated, and they have not been affected yet mm-hmm. from community rating, and thank goodness, I'm hoping Georgia won't enforce it this year, I would say the answer is not as much as the under 50, and they're not necessarily mandated. So if they're offering benefits, it's generally because they want to. They've been offering them. It's a retention tool. So I wouldn't say that the above 50 has seen a dramatic effect in healthcare costs as you under 50 market.
Yeah, and actually, you went through this with Steve, and Steve, since he's such a nice guy, actually was already in compliance, right, Steve? I mean, this was no problem for you.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, we've offered medical insurance from pretty much day one. Mm-hmm. So that wasn't an issue. I mean, the only issue we've dealt with, like everybody, is just the rising cost of coverage.
Right. And so when you saw this coming, I guess, towards you, you were lucky because when a lot of people were scrambling, this is something that you've been offering to your employees. And you have how many employees now? Is it 90 now that you have?
We have 93 employees. 93, wow. Actually 92 full-time, and we do have one part-time employee.
Wow, so you were well prepared for this already. And did, Lisa, did you go through, I guess, and you and Steve, did you guys do some sort of analysis just to make sure that they're in compliance? Is that what you do for certain companies?
Oh, yeah, we make sure that they meet the affordability testing that I talked about earlier. We also kind of had a great success story with Steve's company because they grew substantially in the past year as well, and we were able to renegotiate their rates mid-year because of that growth. So wow. We're always looking and say it decreased the rates about 15% because of their growth.
Wow.
And
excellent. Yeah.
So we're constantly looking at ways to help our clients. But yes, we do those testing to make sure they're meeting those compliance requirements of ECHA.
Okay. And so suppose somebody is not complying with the actually, you know what? I'm going to hold that question. We're going to go to break. I'm getting the signal here. We're going to go to break, and I'm going to come back, and we'll finish what was going to be that thought. Thanks.
And now, back to In Process, conversations about business in the 21st century with Evelyn Ashley and John Monahan. For more information, visit trusted-counsel.com.
Welcome back. So, we were talking in the middle of, you know, how to comply with ECHA. And it seems like it's appropriate to ask the question, well, what if I don't like Obamacare and I don't like ECHA and... I don't want to comply. What happens to me as an employer?
Well, as an employer, then those penalties could come into play, which I mentioned before. And so if you just choose not, and it can make sense for an employer this year. They did give some transition relief in the fact that they said, okay, if you choose not to, we're going to let you subtract a certain amount of employees this first year. From that total pool of your employees. So and that first year it's been 80. You could subtract 80. So if you did have 100 employees mm-hmm. and you wanted to subtract that 80, it may have made more financial sense initially to be able to take that subtraction and pay that $2,000 penalty on that remaining 20 employees that you had versus offering coverage. But what we found is recently we wrote a national car wash group that had never offered coverage, and this is a success story that we went through and did various calculations on the penalty versus different participation requirements that, depending on how many may participate in the plan, we ended up having about 50% participation, and it was in the six-figure savings from paying the penalty. So, wow. You know, what people don't realize is, you know, the unfortunate part is that you're never going to have 100% participation, and people go into it immediately thinking everybody's going to enroll, all of a sudden I'm going to have to pay for every single employee, right. And they don't really go through the actual calculation that everybody's not going to participate in the plan regardless, unless you really offer zero, don't have them pay $0 and have an automatic enrollment. Right. But the other flip side of that is every individual has to realize that they are now, by law, every U.S. citizen required to have health insurance, and for a while the penalties have not been that much. In 2016, they are going to increase to an amount that I think will get more people's attention on realizing, well, even if I have to pay this much through my employer or an individual plan, that's still better than paying the penalty, which is 2.5% of household income or $695 per person, whichever is greater. Wow. So every individual will have to pay that penalty in 2016. Mm-hmm. It is less in 2015, but I am going ahead and looking forward because that's the amount that probably the largest amount I've seen that will probably get people's attention on evaluating if they need it.
So how is compliance administered?
Compliance specifically?
How is the government finding out if they don't have insurance or they're not offering it?
Good question. Now there is a question on your taxes. And the 1095 forms that are being distributed, 1095C forms that are going to be distributed. So all of a sudden you're going to start having employees ask, what are these forms? Why am I receiving this with my W-2? They're not going to understand what they are. We still don't know if that's actually going to be required to be filed with your taxes. I think you're just going to have to keep it on file showing that you had proof that you were offered coverage and it was affordable. It's basically people filling it out on their taxes, and that 1095C will also say that the employer did offer you an affordable plan, therefore you should not qualify for subsidy in the marketplace, because by being offered an affordable plan, it does exclude you from being eligible for subsidy in the marketplace, and they don't want people double dipping. And so we're concerned that eventually, whenever it reconciles, that people could receive a pretty large tax bill after they go through this initial reporting in 2016.
So I want to go back to something you were saying earlier about in some circumstances it might make sense for a business to pay the penalty. In some cases it might not. So you have to do the analysis. And you said this year you could subtract 80.
That was 2015. 2016, we have not heard of any reprieve yet of being able to subtract any employees.
Okay, So this might be something that every year, really, I mean, you might sit down with Steve and say, hey, we got to go through this. We got to redo the analysis and see, you know, where this is at and what the cost savings might be. Because really, this seems like it's changing quite a bit, or at least worth revisiting each year.
I don't necessarily see the reprieve of being able to subtract employees continuing,
okay,
honestly. So it won't be 80. If so, it might be like 30. Mm-hmm. And it will continue to decrease. So, but somebody like Steve's company, you know, people have been offering benefits forever that aren't mandated to offer benefits because they believe that that's what they want to do for their employees. And Steve and NextGen are one of those companies. Right. So, we don't have a lot of those conversations with our clients because most of our clients have been offering benefits because that's what they want to do for retention tool and to hire good employees. And because the reality is still with group, you're going to get a much better product in the group market than you are in the individual market. So,
and Steve, I was wondering, I mean, a lot of companies that are at one point, you weren't at 93 employees. You were obviously a smaller company and you've grown, but you've offered these benefits since the beginning. And a lot of companies, as they're growing, they decide that we don't want to offer it. So what was your mindset going into that? I mean, it's pretty generous to do that, especially as you're a smaller company and growing. You know, what were your thoughts? Was the marketplace demanding it, or is it just something you felt was the right thing to do?
I mean, my vision was to always grow a large company, and the key is having the best employees, and they want medical insurance. And if you don't have medical insurance, you know, you'll end up hiring employees, but then they will leave for benefits. And we had that situation in the beginning because the rates and the portion, you know, the portion that we would pay was not regulated. And back when we started, you still had situations where a spouse was not working and you had a husband and he needed family coverage, and family coverage was very expensive. And what portion did you pay? And the large companies were paying back then, 15, 16, 17 years ago, large companies would be paying 100% of family. Mm-hmm. A lot of them don't do that anymore. So we lost a lot of family people, and family people are, you know, those are the type of employees we want, the ones that have, that are married and have children and have responsibilities and have the need to grow their income.
Right. Yeah. Me, I'm trying to grow my family, so that always keeps me working hard. That's on my my mind every day. It's like, got to go to work. People have to eat.
So, need health care.
I know, need health care. So what are the plans like on the Affordable Care Act? Do I got to go through an exchange or do I not? If I mean, if not from an individual perspective, but if I'm an employer offering this to my employees, how, what sort of plans are available?
Right. Well, the market's segmented into currently, and this is pretty how we think it will continue, really in the 2 to 50 space. 51 to 99 is still looked at as its own space. 100 to about 500, and then 500 and above is kind of how the market is segmented. So generally in the 2 to 50 and 51 and above, those are two completely different plan designs that you're going to be able to offer because of that, going back to that community rating and that 2 to 50 space. If Georgia doesn't pass it, that 51 to 99 would come, probably that would, those 2 to 50 plans will be offered 2 to 99, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think 51 to 99 will still be more flexible. So there are, I mean, there are a lot of plans in that 2 to 50, but they're mandated in what type of plans. Of course, there are the metallic plans that you hear about, the bronze, silver, but that actually applies all the way above the 50. There's just more flexibility in the above the 50, basically, because of underwriting. The other thing that they've also done is put out-of-pocket caps on the Affordable Care Act plans. Mm-hmm. In 2015, it's $6,600 for an individual, and I think $13,200 for family. Worst case, no matter what, that's all you spend in a calendar year. So even that includes all of your copays. So those Affordable Care Act plans that are out there, that's that it does cap what you can spend. They also did away with in any lifetime maximums. Now it's unlimited. You know, you had some plans that were a million or two, right, and you could exceed that million if something catastrophic were to occur. And another biggie is they've extended the preventive care under the Affordable Care Act that we've often heard about, and it's all covered at 100%. That was a biggie that was added to the plans, and that's all plans. Mm-hmm. There is a big difference, one more thing, between fully insured and self-funded. There are some differences in fully insured and self-funded, and some things that come into play with those different plans, too.
And it does sound like, you know, to me, one of the issues I think that all Americans have had, and certainly, you know, you work hard all of your life, and then one day you get sick, and the next thing you know, you're bankrupt because insurance won't cover you. So to me, there's an aspect of what's been put together that is very, very attractive, where it does give all of us some level of confidence that there are limits if you do get sick.
Right. No, I agree. I mean, I would say the industry was evolving prior to that to do away with them and more of the plans, but now it's mandated by law.
Well, I think we're going to take a quick break now. When we come back, we're going to talk to Steve a little bit more about his business and some of the things he does from a compliance and benefits perspective and really training. He has a pretty large employee base there. So we'll take a break and we'll come back.
Hey! And now, back to In Process, conversations about business in the 21st century with Evelyn Ashley and John Monahan. For more information, visit trusted-counsel.com.
Welcome back. We just wanted to talk a little bit to Steve about the actual, sort of the actual human resource that goes on every day in these businesses. And he has a lot of them, but since he's really grown in size and quite fast. So first, Steve, I want to ask you a little bit about your business, Next Gen, or Next Generation Cellular, Next Gen as you like to call it, is a Sprint preferred reseller. What exactly is that?
Well, we're a partner of Sprint. We own and operate our own Sprint stores. They look just like a Sprint company-owned stores. We exclusively sell Sprint services and products. Interestingly enough, probably over 60% of the Sprint stores in the United States are owned by companies like myself. And that's pretty much what we do.
Yeah. So that would be one of the stores I would walk in and get my cell phone at, right?
And let me
Correct.
Tell you, and John needs a new cell phone.
I do.
So I think he probably needs to come by and see you.
I'm on a bad plan. They won't subsidize my phone. So the only thing that's going to... Now I'm just going to buy a new phone out of shame. Essentially, I'm embarrassed to use it.
I'm working on it.
Well, you know, the whole industry has gone away from the subsidized phone. It's all leasing, and if you watch the marketing that Sprint's been putting out there, we can put you in a brand new iPhone 6S for as low as $1 a month. Believe
wow.
it or not.
All right, yeah. John, there you go.
Yeah, I have no excuses now.
No excuses.
I might have to pay a trip up there.
So, Steve, how did you get into the business? How did you decide that this was an area where you wanted to go?
Well, I've always liked gadgets. I was in the paging business. I was selling pagers and beepers when I was 20 years old.
Oh, wow.
Jeez.
And I've always liked technology. Back in 1969, when I was 12 years old, I purchased a colored film from Radio Shack and put it on my black and white TV screen to simulate colored TV. if you remember that product,
that's awesome.
It was back in 19. You know how we got into this business? 1996. My wife and I were working in a cell phone store, a company that was selling Bell South Mobility in Cumming, Georgia. And the company drastically reduced the commissions that they were paying us. And I had a good feel for the numbers, what they were making every time somebody hooked up a Bell South Mobility phone. And I said, we can make a lot more money on our own. We had some money saved. We ran into some people from Nextel at the time. And we opened up a store in East Cobb. That was 18 years ago.
Wow. And did you guys immediately start growing, or was it sort of a staged, over years, a slow path, or did it sort of boom recently? What's been the growth trajectory of the company? It looks like, I mean, even from the last time, your website said 11, and now you got 12, so you must be growing pretty fast.
Well, yeah. I mean,
stores, that is. Yeah.
We grew to 2 stores in 2 years, and then I think at three stores in 3 years. And then we kind of lulled, and then it kind of took off. Really, the growth has been in the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. A lot of people I knew that owned businesses, they kept giving me advice that don't expand too quickly. That'll kill a business, and I kind of listened to it. Mm-hmm. And so that's where we are right now with 12 stores. And I think the growth going forward is going to be much more rapid.
Right. And you're at a size now with your employees that you actually have to start complying with a whole host of federal laws. There's the Family and Medical Leave Act. There's the age discrimination laws that come into play, military leave. These things get to be quite a bit. At what point did you sort of get a dedicated HR person? What did you do before that? I mean, at a certain point, when you first start, you can't hire an HR person dedicated to that. So there's a balance there of, oh, well, now maybe this is becoming a lot. Let's sort of phase this in. I mean, how did you approach your HR issues early on, and how has it grown now towards maybe you have someone doing it on a full-time basis?
Well, we in the beginning, I was doing every aspect. I wore every hat, and then we got a bookkeeper as the business grew, and then we had the bookkeeper get involved in HR, and then the company grew to the point where we needed dedicated bookkeeping and a dedicated HR person, and I think that was probably 7-8 years ago. Mm-hmm. And in addition to, so we have a full-time HR person. We have a full-time recruiting person, which is obviously recruiting is, you know, works very closely with HR. And that's actually something that we added about 6 months ago, full-time recruiting. Hmm. And then we work with Lisa. And, you know, that's a nice comfort level because Lisa does such a great job. And using a company like Lisa, there's really no cost. And I don't know if a lot of the listeners know that. And Lisa just has been real helpful. And then we have another company, Adams Keegan, which Lisa referred us to, which does our payroll and provides us the website to store and all the information and reporting. Okay. So that's what we're doing on HR. I hope that answers that question.
Yeah, certainly. And to me, it seems like there would be a lot of HR compliance. And I'm sure that's your favorite topic as a business owner, is talking about HR, right? That's where you want to spend most of the day is speaking about those issues. But what would you see would be the biggest challenge or the biggest time concern about HR? Is it a lot of training? Is that really a lot of what you focus on?
I'm trying to, HR, you mean in regards to training, in regards to
training your staff? I mean, you have a pretty big staff there. I imagine you have a lot of employees, and a lot of time is probably spent training them on how to do their job correctly, especially in a field moving as fast as yours. Is there a pretty big emphasis on that? And does that play into sort of employee retention? The better they're trained, the more likely they are to stay, things of that nature?
Oh, yeah. It's all about training. Sprint provides us with 1 week's worth of online training. And then I'm a big believer in observational training, so we put people in stores to observe. I think there's a lot of benefit watching people who know what they're doing and giving it a soak-in period. So, you know, we kind of use 30 days. It also gives us a good feel for the employee to make sure we made the correct hire. But training is ongoing. Training is every day. Mm-hmm. The older you get, the more you realize you're learning something every day. So training, it's all about training. Our job is to hire the right people and teach them, help them become successful.
Right. And Is there different training programs for the managerial staff than there is for sort of the store employee?
Not really. The difference would be the managers would be the manager trainees, MITs as we call them, would be working with our more successful managers, but very much observational in nature.
Okay. And you said Your HR team, you guys look outside for outside consultants and you bring them in. So, Lisa, you've done some of the HR work there as well. I mean, do you help them sort of stay abreast of specific laws? Because things are really, maybe not from a legal perspective, but the difference compliance, is that how you partner with HR professionals? Usually they handle the employees the day-to-day, and then you come in for the specifics, which might zero in on places they can save money or perhaps do things more in compliance.
Yeah. You know, the main thing that we do with our clients, and our role has expanded a lot more so with the Affordable Care Act, and but we do work with them specifically. You know, benefits and cost and negotiation is definitely a big portion of what we do, and making sure they have the appropriate benefit package to meet their needs. If they are growing in other states, you want to make sure you've got the national networks and a network that's going to fulfill those that need, things like that. Secondly, compliance is a big piece of now what we're doing, specifically related to the Affordable Care Act, which then expands into areas such as a control group, you know, and understanding different areas. And then it does roll into areas such as FMLA that we've talked about and ADA, because some of that does, you know, and under FMLA, you do continue benefits and understanding those laws. But we do partner, depending on the needs, with companies that, you know, for example, that we referred to NextGen, specifically maybe for a deeper dive into their HR needs, because we don't always there are some areas that we will need to outsource, you know, based on HR, based on the needs of the HR. But we definitely work a lot in compliance with our clients.
Okay, great. Well, we really appreciate you and Steve being guests on the show.
Plus, I think this has been a great education in the way that an employer can actually attract great employees is by offering wonderful plans to help them support their goals.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. So, okay, well, we're wrapping up. If you'd like to contact Lisa, you can find her on the internet at corebenefitsga.com. If you would like to learn more about Next Generation Cellular, please visit their website, nextgencell.com, or even better, stop by one of their 12 locations in the Metro Atlanta area. Locations can be found on their website. We hope you enjoyed the show today. If you have any questions on the topic, please reach out to info@trusted-counsel.com. And if you are interested in learning more about us, please visit our website at trusted-counsel.com, where you will find a listing of our past and upcoming shows. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you.
This has been In Process, conversations about business in the 21st century with Evelyn Ashley and John Monahan, presented by Trusted Counsel, a corporate and intellectual property law firm. For more information, visit trusted-counsel.com. In Process with Evelyn Ashley and John Monahan, Wednesdays at noon on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.